Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Daled Amud Bet, six lines up from the bottom. Gemara is discussing She'ena Gvoa Asara Tefachim. If the sukkah is not a minimum of 10 tefachim, it is not a kosher sukkah. Gemara says, Minolan, how do you know that 10 tefachim is the minimum shiur of a sukkah? As Tosafot points out over here, this is not only for sukkah, but this is in Shabbat as well. Anywhere where we have this din of a minimum of 10 tefachim to be a reshut, where do we know this din from? The Gemara says, Itmar Rav, V'Rabbi Chanina, V'Rabbi Yochanan, V'Rabbi Chaviva Matnu. All of these four Amoraim came to give us an answer, which is, and then the Gemara has a sidebar here, like a parenthetical statement, which is, B'kula Seder Moed, Polki Haizuga, Chalufei Rabbi Yochanan, Miley Rabbi Yonatan. Anytime you see this grouping in Seder Moed, you should take out Rabbi Yochanan and put in Rabbi Yonatan. So Rabbi Yochanan is the wrong individual in this list, but rather it should be Rabbi Yonatan. Aron Tisha Bekaporot Tefach. So this is what they said. The reason they know this is because the Aron is 9 Tefachim high, and the Kaporet, the cover to the Aron, is another Tefach. Harikan Asara. Together, the Aron and the Kaporet are 10 Tefachim. Uchtiv. And it says about the Aron and the Kaporet, Menuati Lecha Sham Vidibarti Tcha Me'ala Kaporet. It says Hashem will appear to you there and speak to you from above the Kaporet. That means that Hashem is communicating with Moshe from above the Kaporet. Bitanya, we have a brayta. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Meulam lo yada shchina lamata, v'lo Moshe ve'Eliyahu demarom. That the Shechina never went down to earth, and Eliyahu and Moshe Rabbeinu never went up to the Shemaim, Shneamar. Pasuk says in Tehilim, Hashemaim Shemaim LaShem, the heavens belong to Hashem, v'aretz natan libnei Adam. And the earth was given to man, meaning, and man belongs down here on earth. Mar says, v'lo yada shchina lamato. Is that really true, that the Shechina never came below 10 fachim aktiv? V'ayred Hashem al Har Sinai. Hashem descended upon Har Sinai. Mar says, no problem, that's l'malo mi'asarat fachim. That was only within 10 fachim of Har Sinai. V'aktiv. Doesn't it say in the Pasuk in Zechariah, Latid Lavo, V'amdu raglav v'yomuhu al har ha-zitim, that Hashem's feet will stand on har ha-zitim? So Gemara says, again, l'mala mi'asarat tefachim, above 10 tefachim. V'lo alu Moshe v'leo l'marom. Is it really true that Moshe v'leo never went up to the heavens? V'aktiv. U'moshe Allah el alukim. Moshe ascended to God. Does it mean that he went up to the heavens? Gemara says, l'mata mi'asarat. He didn't go above 10 tefachim. V'aktiv. V'yal Eliyahu basa'ara ha-shamayim. That Eliyahu went up in a storm to the heavens. Gemara again says, Lamatu mi'asarat, that's below 10 tefachim. V'aktiv, what are you going to do with the pasuk in Iyov, which says, Me'achez p'nei kisei, parshez alav anano. So the pashtu, the pasuk is, the one who closes in the face of the throne, parshez alav anano, he spreads his cloud over it. The Gemara here, darshins, v'amar rabbi tanhum, m'lameit shipirash shakai miziv shkinato. That Hashem placed of His glory, va'anano, and then of His cloud, alav, unto Moshe Rabbeinu. So they're darshaning it from a notrikun. They're looking at the word parshez as if it is an acronym. Melameid sheperesh shakai miziv shchinato va'anano alav, on Moshe Rabbeinu. So that means that Moshe Rabbeinu was up in the heavens because the priest of the Shekhinah was placed on Moshe Rabbeinu. That means that Moshe Rabbeinu was up where the Shekhinah was, above Tven Tfachim. The Gemara says, no, l'mata mi'asara. Mikol makom, what are you going to do with the pasuk? Says, me'achez p'nei kisei. So the Gemara says, they're also here, darshaning not in the simple form. Me'achez here means ochez. He holds onto. He grabs onto the kisei akavod. That means that Moshe Rabbeinu is holding the kisei akavod. And that means he's above 10 tefachim, if Hashem is always above 10 tefachim. Where it says, ishtiruve ishtirav le kisei ad asara. That the throne descended until asara v'naket bay, and that's what he was holding onto. But not that Moshe ascended above 10 tefachim, but rather that the kisei akavod extended itself below 10 tefachim that allowed Moshe Rabbeinu to grab a hold of it. From this we conclude that the Aron and Kaporet together are 10 tefachim. And we learn from the Braita of Rabbi Yossi that 10 tefachim is a cutoff in terms of reshut, that there's a significant difference between below 10 tefachim and above 10 tefachim. Above 10 tefachim is the purview of HaKadosh Baruch Hu of the Shekhinah, and below 10 tefachim is the purview of man. And since 10 tefachim is a dividing line for something that's a reshut that is significant, so too, by sukkah, we're going to say that the 10 tefachim delineates a significant reshut, and therefore it'll be the minimum amount or shi'ur for the sukkah, which is 10 tefachim. Mar says, okay, how did you get to this 10 tefachim? Vishlama Aron Tisha. I understand that the Aron itself is 9 tefachim. Tichdiv, because it says, in Parshat Shumah, Vasu Aron Atzei Shitim, Amatayim Vechetzi Arko, 2.5 amot in length, Vamama Chetzi Rachbo, 1.5 amot in width, Vamama Vechetzi Hamato, and 1.5 amot of Koma, of height. Now, an Amah is 6 tefachim, so 1.5 amot is 9 tefachim. Ela Kaporet Tefach Minolan. How do you know what the thickness of the kaporet is? Because the Torah never tells us what the thickness of the kaporet is. The Tani Rabbi Chanina, kol hakelim she'asa Moshe natna b'hen Torah midat arkan u'midat rachban. The Torah gives you the length and the width, u'midat komatan and their height. Kaporet, by the kaporet, midat orka u'midat rachban natna. He gave you the length and the width because it covers over the aron. Midat komata lo natna, but it doesn't give you the height of the kaporet. It says, let us go find the minimum or the smallest keli, and we'll assume that that's what the kaporet is. Shenemar says, "Vasita lo misgeret tofach saviv." By the shulchan, it says that you should make for it a rim around that is a tefach. Tofach saviv means a tefach thick. Malahalan tefach, just like by the misgeret of the shulchan, it's a tefach. Afkan tefach, so too by the kaporet, the thickness or the height of it will be a tefach. Where it says, v'nelef mikelim gufayu. Why don't you learn now from other kelim themselves? The kelim themselves, the actual kelim, the shulchan, the mizbeach, all these other items that have a significant more height. Why don't we learn that to teach us what the height of the kaporet is? Where it says, tafasta meruba lo tafasta, tafasta muat tafasta. This is a colloquial expression, a mashal, that says that if you grab the majority or the more, then you have nothing. If you grab the minimum, then you have everything. So what Rashi explains over here is, subsumed in the larger number is the smaller number. So if you grab the smaller number, that's the minimum amount. You at least must have that amount. If, for instance, you have a case where there's a choice between $100 and $200, or 100 shekel and 200 shekel, if you take the 100, then for sure, you are okay, because you at least get 100, and you might even be entitled to get 200. But the 100 they'll never take back from you because the 100 is a minimum that for sure you get. On the other hand, if you take 200, then you're at risk. Because it might be that you're right and it's 200, but you might be wrong and then they're going to ask you to refund 100 of it because you took 100 too much. So what the expression says is you take the amount that you're certain about. You take the amount that is encompassed by all of the possibilities. So here, the tofach, the misgeret is a tefach, the kelim are more. But if you take a tefach, there's no way that you're wrong about the tefach. If you take a larger number, it's a possibility that you're wrong now because it could have been a tefach and now you took more. That's the way Rashi explains it. Tosafot on the Amud Bet adds an additional element that if you want to take more than the minimum or common denominator between them, you have to bring a raya, you have to bring a proof that you're entitled to it. So without that proof, we stay at the minimum common denominator between them. So here we have a choice between a tefach and something greater. I'm going to pick the tefach. Where it says, v'nelef mitzitz. Why don't we learn that from the tzitz that we learned in this week's parsha? The Kohen Gadol has a tzitz that goes, al-mitzchot tamid, that's on his forehead. The Tanya tzitz, domek min tas shel zahav. It's like a gold plate. V'rachav bet etzbaot. And it's two etzbaot thick. Umikaf mi ozen the ozen. It goes from ear to ear. V'ketuv ala bet shitim. It's written on it two rows. Yud kei milamalo. The Shem Hashem above. Bekodesh lamed milamato, and kodesh lamed below. Now, there's a controversy in the Rishonim as to how exactly this looks. First of all, Tosafot points out that the Yud-Kei, even though it's a Shem Hashem, and it's a Shem Gamur, it's not considered to be Hoget Hashem Ba'utiotav. There's no restriction against pronouncing that Shem Hashem. As opposed to Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, where there is a restriction against pronouncing it, nevertheless here, by Yud-Kei, there's no restriction against pronouncing it. And we do say that name, or that Shem Hashem. Although Tosafot says we're generally machmir for all Shemot, including Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei, and any name that's bigger than that, the 42 Otio, the 42 letter name of Hashem, or the 72 letter of Hashem, we in general avoid pronouncing them because of this problem that you're not allowed to pronounce the Shem Hashem, Ke-Oti Otav, the way that it is written. But first of all, the Yud-Kei is not included in that. Number two is, this idea that Kodesh Le-Hashem is written on two rows is somewhat problematic. Why would you write Kodesh at the bottom and then Hashem on top? The answer is simple, because you want the Shem Hashem to be on top. But that runs you into certain problems. Rashi himself says that's exactly the way it was done. It says Kodesh Le on the bottom centered, and then above it, it says Hashem on top. And that's exactly how it looked. Rashi in another place, and the Rambam suggests that it says Kodesh on the bottom line and La Hashem on the line above it centered. So those are two different opinions in Rashi, as well as the opinion of the Rambam. Tosafot over here says that it can't be that way, because you don't read normally in that fashion. And therefore he says that the way it was written was, Kodesh Le was written, when you're facing the Kohen Gadol, it was right justified on the bottom line. And Hashem was written on the left justified on the top line. And that way you would read it from right to left, you read it Kodesh Lashem, even though the line below was Kodesh Le and Hashem was above. But that way you get the Shem Hashem on top. But you can still read it in a normal fashion. The Rabbeinu Tam actually has an opposite shita, which is that the Kodesh Le was written left justified at the bottom line, and Hashem was written right justified on the top line. Rabbeinu Tam has a very difficult shita that the Kodesh Le was written at the end of the top line, meaning left justified on the top line, and Hashem was written at the beginning of the bottom line, right justified, in order that you can read it from top to bottom, Kodesh Le Hashem. Over here, he has the Shem Hashem below Kodesh Le Hashem. It's because above and below, it has to do with the vertical columns. And that when the Gemara says above and below, it's talking about the columns. It means above means the first vertical column. That's where Shem Hashem is. And the second vertical column means below, which is all the way to the left. But then we have a problem, which is, Vamar Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi, Ani Ritiv Biromi. We know this, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi was in the treasure areas of the Caesar. And he says, when I was there, I saw the tzitz. He said it was written in a single row, Kodesh LaHashem. So the Rambam himself in Mishneh Torah says that there were people who wrote it that way, b'di'avad, it was okay, that there were different forms of the tzitz that were out there, and that sometimes it was written on one shita, but the chatchilo, you should have done it on two lines. So now the Gemara says, danim klimi kli, vin danim klimi takshit. We deal from kli to kli. If we're trying to extrapolate measurements, we're going to learn for the kaporet from another kli, like the mizgeret. We're not going to learn from the tzitz, which is a takshit. Mar says, v'nelef mizer. Why don't you learn now from the zer, which is the crown around the shulchan, which has, v'asit lo zer zahav saviv. You make a little crown around the shulchan, and we have it by some of the other kelim. We have it on the mizbeach, as well as on the aron. And we amar mar, zer mashu. The zer, the crown, is only a mashu. So when it says, dining klimi kli, vein dining klimi hakshir kli. We learn out a kli from another utensil, but we don't learn it out from something that's an ornament or decorative to the kli. Where it says, yachi mizgeret nami hakshir kli hu. Wait a minute, the mizgeret also, that frame that goes around the shulchan is also a hakshir kli. It's not the kli itself. Where it says, mizgardo lamata haita. It depends where you think this band was on the shulchan. There's a machloket as to whether the mizgeret was around the legs, or was it on top of the legs around the shulchan. So there's an opinion that it was wrapping around the legs and it held the four legs together. It was part of the structure of the kli. And then the shulchan sat on top of that frame formed by the mizgeret. There are others who suggest that it was mizgeret, was a lamalo, was above, and it was actually like a rim around the shulchan. So the Gemara says, the mizgeret was below and it was part of the structure of the kli, then it makes sense that you can learn from it. According to one who says that this band was above and it was like a rim around the shulchan, how are you going to explain it? Then why should you learn from the mizgeret of the shulchan and not from the zer? Because then it's also an ornament, just like the zer. We're going to learn out something that has measurements in the Torah from something else that has measurements in the Torah. The tzitz and the zer are all mitorah shebal peh that we know that they have a certain measurement. Tosafot over here says possibly the bet etzba'ot are mid derabanan for the tzitz, or even if you suggest that they're halacha l'moshe misinai, they're not written in the Torah, and same is true by the zer. The zer, in fact, that the zer is a mashru was also a Torah shebal peh aspect and not written in the Torah. But when we have the mizgeret tofach saviv, it tells you that's a tefach. So we have something explicit in the Torah telling us that size, and we're going to use that to extrapolate to learn out the kaporet that was a tefach thick. The Tosfot over here spends some time on the tzitz itself and the two etzbaot and the suggestion of the riva that the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedjot actually wore different hats. He mentions it because the Torah calls the hat of the Kohen Gadol a mitznefet and the hat of the Kohen Hedjot a mikbat. And he attributes the difference to being the height or the size of the hats because the Kohen Gadol needed a smaller hat in order to fit on the tzitz as well as his tefillin on his head. Whereas the Kohen Hedjot only had to fit on tefillin, not the tzitz, and therefore he could use a higher or bigger hat than the Kohen Gadol. Even though the Gemara in Yoma says that a Kohen Hedjot could wear the same clothing the Kohen Gadol wore on Yom HaKippurim, which seems to indicate that there is no difference between the hats. Tosfot over there says it seems to be a proof that it's not like the Riva, that there is no difference between Mikbad and Mitznefet. Here he suggests that maybe you could argue that there is no difference. They both have to wear a hat, but it's a different type of hat. It's not saying exactly alike, but they're similar in that they have to wear a hat, but they have to wear the appropriate hat. He also mentions that on Yom Kippur, where the Kohen Gadol didn't have to wear a tzitz, he calls it a mitznefet, and he still wears a mitznefet. But that you could argue is low plug, that once he has it because of the tzitz, he always wears a mitznefet and not a mikbat. Although the Gemara seems to use the terms interchangeably, mitznefet for Kohen Hedjot as well as Kohen Gadol. Just mentioning it because it's Minyan Diyoma, it's Parshat HaShavua, Parshat Tetzaveh, so that is an issue that is taken up here by Tosafot. Ravuna Marmi Hocha. Ravuna offers an alternative as to how we know that the Kaporet was a Tefach, because it says, Apnei HaKaporet Kedma, on the face of the Kaporet, on the eastern side or the front side. So it sounds like the Pnei HaKaporet, the Kaporet has a face to it. Vein Panim Pachot Mitefach. And a face is a minimum of a Tefach. Ve'ema, how do you know that the face is a minimum of a Tefach? Maybe it's Ke'apei de Bar Yuchni. Maybe it's like this very large bird that is described in the Gemara in Bechorot, and we saw it in Yoma as well, so that a much bigger face would be bigger than a tefach. The Gemara uses the same answer again, which is tafasta meruba lo tafasto. If you take the larger size, you haven't gotten it. Tafasta muat tafasta. If you take the smaller size, at least the common denominator exists, and then you're okay. So we would take the smaller. Gemara says, Ema ka'api di tziparto. Then why don't you take the face of like a hummingbird, the zutar tuva, that's very small. And then you would have even below a tefach. And then you would say tefasta muat would be even smaller than that. So again, here, it's not clear if the Gemara is saying zutar tuva is a description and the Gemara leaves it as a question, or the zutar tuva means that it's just too small and we wouldn't say that. From the continuation of the Gemara here, it sounds like the Gemara says you would have accepted this as an answer. And therefore, Rav Huna has to come up with an alternative, which is, Amar Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Rav Huna, pnei gamar. He has a gzeira shava, pnei, ktiv ochel, pnei kaporet, kedma. Says over here by the Kaporet that it has a face. From the face of his father Yitzchak. So that's a human face. So Pnei Pnei teaches you a human face. And the human face is a minimum of a tefach. Where it says, V'nelef mipanim shel malo. Why don't you learn out from the face of Hashem, face of God, dichtiv, your oath, Pnei Elokim v'tirtzeini. Because we use the word panim or pnei with the shem Hashem. Gemara says again, tafasta meruba lo tafasta, tafasta muat tafasta. We're going to take the smaller of the two measurements. Gemara says, v'nelef mikruv, tichtiv ala kaporet yupnei hakruvim. So we also have the word pnei used by kruvim. Amar Rabbi Yaakov, gemiri ein pnei hakruvim pchutim mitefach. We actually have a mesora that the face of the kruvim was actually a minimum of a tefach. So it turns out that they're the same thing. And you could learn it out from there. Rav Huna, nami mehocha gamir. Rav Huna and Kol Hanami could have learned out of Pnei Kruvim, just like he learned out of Pnei of an Adam, because both of them are a Tefach. Umay Kruv. As a side asks, what's a Kruv? Amar Ravu k'Rabya. It's like a small child. Shekem b'Bavel k'rim l'yinoka Ravya. So in Bavel, they call young children Ravya. So Kruvim is the face of a young child. What are you going to do with the Pasuk in Yechezkel that describes the Maaseh and the Merkava? And over there, there are four faces, and one of the faces is Pnei Achad, Pnei Akruv, Pnei Asheni, Pnei Adam. One of them is a Kruv, and one of them is an Adam. And now you're telling me that the Kruv is a person. Gemara says, Hainu Kruv, Hainu Adam. That's going to be the same thing. Gemara says, no. Ape Ravave, Ape Zutra. You have two faces. One is the face of an older, bigger individual, and one is the face of a younger child. So the Kruvim are the younger child. The Pnei Adam is the face of an older, more mature individual. So that Gemara concluded, that's how we know that the Kaporet is a Tefach Thik. Either we learn it out from the Mizgeret of the Shulchan, or according to Rav Huna, we learn it out from Gzeir Shava of Pnei Pnei, the fact that the Kaporet has a face to it, and we learn out that a face is the size of a Tefach, either because we compare it to the Kruvim, or compare it to a face of a person, and we use that number because of Tefasta Muat Tefasta. That's the smallest number we can find that is considered to be a face. And because of that, we use that as our standard for a face of the Kaporet, which is a Tefach. Even though we find in the Torah the word Pnei used in larger settings, we don't find it in smaller settings, and therefore the minimum is a Tefach. So now we know that the Kaporet is a Tefach. So together with the Aron, you now have 9 Tefachim of the Aron, 1 Tefach of the Kaporet, you have your 10 Tefachim. Now the Gemara wants to know, wait a minute, you tell me that the Aron is 10 Tefachim high, so that we learn that there's a separate Reshut after 10 Tefachim. How do I know that that is including the schach or without the schach? So my says, how do you know that the airspace of the sukkah has to be 10 tefachim, excluding the schach? How do you know that 10 tefachim doesn't include the schach itself? Say that it includes the schach, and therefore the airspace can be smaller. We learn this out from the Beit HaMikdash. Because it says in Beit HaMikdash, V'bayit asher bana melech Shlomo la'ashem 60 amah orko, that the house here being the Heichal, was 60 amot long, V'esrim rachbo, 20 amot wide, U'shloshim amah komato, and it was 30 amot tall. Uchtiv, komat, hakruv echad eser ba'amah, V'chein hakruv asheni, and the same thing with the second group. Kruvim in the time of Shlomo were 10 amot high. Now first of all, in terms of the 30 amot high of the Eichal, there is another pasuk there that says that the devir was only 20 amot high. Rashi says that's because there was an aliyah, there was an upper chamber. The lower chamber was only 20 amot high, the upper chamber was 10 amot high. Others explain it depends where you are, whether you're in the Kodesh or Kodeshim or the Kodesh. One of them is 20 amot high, the other one is 30 amot high. Tosafot over here says, no, that the 20 amot high is counted from the top of the Gruvim upward. The Gruvim are 10 amot, to the ceiling is 30 amot, so the 20 amot measures from the top of the Gruvim to the ceiling. But now we know that there are Gruvim there that are 10 amot high. They stand on the floor in the Beit HaMikdash, the Gruvim that Shlomo makes, and they go up 10 amot high. The Gruvim reach a third of the height of the Heichal, or of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. They are 10 amot high. The total height is 30 amot. So they are at one-third mark. Mishkan Nami. So we're going to learn the same thing in the Mishkan. Gruvim b'shlish ha-bayitein umdim. The Gruvim will reach the height of one-third of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Mishkan Kamahavi. How tall is the Mishkan? How tall is the Kodesh HaKodeshim? 10 amot. It's 10 amot high. How do I know that? Dichtiv. 10 amot orach ha-koresh. Because the size of the krashim that make up the Mishkan that houses the Kodesh and Kodesh HaKodeshim are 10 amot high. So the height of the total Kodesh HaKodeshim is 10 amot. So kama habilu, what is that? Shitim pushche, that's 60 tvachim. Because 6 tefach to an amah, 10 amot is 60 tvachim. Tilte kama have, one third of that is how much? Esrim pushche is 20 tvachim. So dala sarad daron v'kaporet. We know that we just established that the Aron and the Kaporet are 10 tefachim. That means you have to the top of the Gruvim from the Aron is another 10 tefachim. Pashalu asara. Ichtiv. And it says about to the Gruvim, Vayu Gruvim per se kinafayim lemala. Sochichim bekanfehem ala Kaporet. That they spread their wings above. They are sochich. They hover over, they cover over with their wings the Kaporet. So you see, Kher Yerachman asachacha lemalami asara. That the wings span, or they are held over the kaporet. And we see that there's a 10 fachim gap between the wings and the kaporet itself. So the Gemara says, okay, I understand that from the head, the top of the head of the groove, is one third of the height of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Total Kodesh HaKodeshim is 60 fachim high. The top of the head of the groove is now at least 20 fachim high. We know that the Kaporet and the Aron reach the 10th Vachim. From the head of the Kerub to the foot of the Kerub, the top of the Kaporet is 10th Vachim. Now, the Gemara makes an assumption then that the wings sit above that level. And that's what the Gemara asks now. How do you know? How do you know that the wings of the Kerubim were above their heads? Maybe it was parallel or level with their head, and therefore it would be included in the 10th Vachim. It says that it is above. It says in the Pasuk, Gruvim per se kinafayim lamalo. They're above. So what are they above? They're above the Gruvim themselves, the wings. Mar says, Ve'ema de midle tuva. How do you know the wings were just above the heads of the Gruvim? Maybe they were way above. And that would mean that the airspace between the wings and the Kaporet is much larger than Tent Bachim. Mar says, Miktiv lamalo lamalo. Doesn't say very high up. It says lamalo once. Lamalo once teaches you right above the height of the heads. Again, tafasta merubalo tafasta, tafasta muat tafasta. The minimum of to be above means to be above the head of the groove. And therefore we learn from this that the airspace of the sukkah must be 10 tefachim. The wings then are a span above the head of the groove, which stands 20 tefachim off the ground, but 10 tefachim off the kaporet. From there we learn that there's an airspace of 10 tefachim, and we have schach, or something that's called schach above that. From that we learn out the din of sukkah that has to have a minimum of 10 tefachim of airspace, and then have schach on top of that. Now the Gemara, which we will continue with tomorrow, says, Anicha the Rabbi Meir. This works all well for Rabbi Meir that says, Kol amot hayu ben uniyot, that he says all the amot of the Mikdash, whether for the building itself, the structure itself, or for the Kelim, were all 6 tefach amot. And therefore, everything can be measured in 6 tefachim. Rabbi Yehuda amar amah shel binyan shishat tefachim. For the structure, they were 6 tefachim, shel Kelim chamisha, but for the utensils used in the Mikdash, then the amah that was used was a 5 tefach amah. Then, ma igel de meimar. Then what are you going to do? Because then the Aron and the Kaporet do not measure up to the 10th Vachim that we spoke about. And now you're going to run into problems, which we'll discuss tomorrow. But according to Rabbi Meir, this all works well. And now we have a source for the fact that a sukkah has to be a minimum of 10th Vachim. And the schach will sit on top of it. Okay, we'll stop over here.